Hiya, you are listening to Intuit, the HuffPost UK entertainment podcast. I'm Daniel Welsh and I'm here as always with Ash Percival and Rachel McGraw. We're going to be picking apart the week's entertainment headlines, starting off with the Broadchurch finale.
Ooh.
Ooh. So that aired earlier this week and there was a big shock when Trisha's attacker was finally named. And I say big shock because, as regular listeners will know, last week we all named our predictions. How did we do?
We got them all.
Not very well.
Not
in fact, not the one person I said it wasn't turned out to be the person it was. So
not the best predictions, but it was a good episode all the same, even if we didn't call any of it. It obviously marked a farewell to Broadchurch because it's the end of the last ever series. And it felt like after quite a shaky second series, they went out on a real high. That was like the consensus from viewers at least. But how do you think the last episode of Broadchurch compared to other TV finales?
The Broadchurch finale was a two-part thing for me. So there was obviously the revelation of Trish's attacker, which was very dark. It was very dark, but I'm sure you're going to touch on that with what you want to say, Rachel. But the actual kind of the last scene of the series was David Tennant's character and Olivia Colman's character, Miller and Hardy. And their relationship has been very, not up and down, but they have just a purely professional relationship that just doesn't lend itself to going out and having a drink or socialising or anything. So the last scene was them proposing that they go out for a drink, and David Tennant's character just shuts it down. And it was kind of the perfect way of just summing up their relationship in one scene. And I think it would have been a mistake if they'd have gone out and had that drink.
It would have been a betrayal, wouldn't it, of the characters. Like, I agree with you. I think it was really nice. I did struggle with how dark the whole episode was. There was a full 20 minutes where I just thought, I do not want to watch this. But as like a, you know, not only a series finale, but like the final episode ever, I thought it was really good. I thought that it was really nice that it closed with the two characters. There were also, so you also had the vicar is leaving to go and do other stuff. Wasn't specified.
Maggie's going to vlog.
Yeah, newspaper editor's going to vlog. And you had this scene where they were all, I know.
She's launching a YouTube channel.
All right, brilliant. I'm glad that all of the minor characters have also been given full backstories.
But it was nice because then you had this final bit where everyone came together and they all went to church for his like final sermon. So I feel like they towed the line really well between like giving you a suitable like conclusion to the case, mm-hmm. and also like these kind of
wrapping goodbye
nice
to Broadchurch
nods,
in general.
Yeah.
I did find that I found the church a bit contrived, but I liked how the fact that obviously the first series opens on the beach by the cliffs. They found Danny Latimer's body, and it also closed there, so it kind of felt like it went full circle.
It was like
a
nice amount of kind of like sentimentality, I think.
Yeah.
But they knew where to draw the line. It wasn't like hammed up.
Because who doesn't want to have a poignant look back at the time that you and your colleague found a body on the beach? Yeah, right. That does sound like a really heartwarming end to the show. I like that it was the two of them, though. Like, I think that that's a good way of wrapping things up because they were the constant throughout the three series. Yeah. I've made no qualms in the fact that I've never watched Broadchurch in my life, so I'm saying this as somebody who didn't actually watch the show. But if you've got these two characters all the way through, I think that's the recipe for a good finale, isn't it? Focusing on the people that you've been on the journey with.
Well, that's kind of because, so 24, it was on before, but I watched it after. Girls also came to an end, and it was the last ever episode of Girls.
How was that? Because I haven't really heard much about it.
It was really good. It brought.
I heard
story.
There was a baby named Grover.
There was.
Which I like.
Yeah.
Isn't that
Riz
the name
Ahmed's
of
baby?
The one that lives in the bin in.
No, that's
Sesame
Oscar
Street.
The Grouch. You're getting your Muppets mixed up. But yeah, Grover is the Muppet. He's the one with the blue head that's sort of. He's like a Pac Man at opens.
Oh, I know, yes. You know the one.
He's adorable. I would definitely name my
He's sort of like lanky and sort of flails his limbs.
Yeah. I mean, firstborn was going to be called Big Bird, but after that, I'll be Grover. I do love Sesame Street. Sorry, Rachel, you were saying something about girls?
Yeah, so it ended, and two of the main characters, so it's obviously the four women throughout the whole thing, and it ended and only two of them were in it, which was a bit sad.
That's weird.
Because basically what's happened is all of their friendships have completely disintegrated and broken down in the way that they do when people are in their 20s. It is really, it's just, it was a perfect ending and it made sense and it showed what would happen, but it was also incredibly depressing.
Well, see, the thing is, I've never had any friends before. So for me, I wouldn't be able to relate to a friendship breaking down because I think you can't even get on the first square of it, really. But do you thought that was a good ending?
I think it was kind of satisfying. Yeah. I think it could have been a bit more. There wasn't much fuss made that it was the end of it, though. It didn't go. It didn't.
Could
go
that
out
be
on this
because
Lena
Dunham is waiting to see how the lay of the land is, and she might pick it up again in a few years?
Who knows?
Who knows? Indeed, watch this space. You mentioned the friendship's fallen apart, though, and I think that's interesting because Desperate Housewives, which I know, Ash, were you a fan of Desperate Housewives?
Actually? I watched the start. I kind of tailed off as
See, we
as it
talk
went
about
on.
Desperate Housewives all the bloody time, didn't we? And like that last episode of Desperate Housewives, it was all of the four of them playing poker, as they always did. And Susan was moving away from the street and she was like, let's always make sure that we make time for poker. And then the camera panned away and I thought, oh, what a lovely moment. And then the narrator goes, but they didn't. It was the most outrageous thing ever. And then the narrator just continued to talk about how their friendships completely fell apart. And that was the end.
Oh, my God. Did they not even do, like, a flash forward or
anything?
They
did, but they were flash forward to them not being friends anymore.
Oh.
That was dark.
I think it wasn't even that you watched them fall out like girls. It was that you watched them solemnly swearing to be friends forever. Yeah. And then they didn't.
See, I do love a flash forward at the end of something. So I can always remember the OC flash forward where see, like, Seth and Summer get married and Ryan's working on the building site as an architect.
That was a good ending.
I was incredibly emotional by the time I finished watching the OC because I watched it all in one go on box set years after anyone had watched it.
Oh my gosh.
It had been a constant throughout my first year at university.
I think that was the first show I ever properly watched, I think. Because I must have been like 15, 16. Yeah, I definitely. But I remember that ending. I do like a flash forward.
And I think Friends will always be the ultimate series finale for me, I think.
You think that was a good job?
Yeah, it just had everything I wanted. It had Ross and Rachel get back together. So it wrapped up like a really long-running storyline that had run throughout the kind of the whole 10 series. There was kind of like new strands that the characters were going off into their 30s. You know, they'd settled down, they'd married, they'd had children. And you kind of felt that chapter in their life was ending and they were going off to begin a new one, which the series wouldn't lend itself to.
Mm-hmm.
God, it's just so depressing, isn't it?
Well, that's what you've just said about Friends. I think Sex and the City is the definitive end of series. Richard, you watched Sex and the City, right? Yeah, last Sex and the City, where Carrie thinks she's going to Paris and then she realises that actually her heart's in New York and then she ends up with Big. And then, Ash, you've just mentioned the long-running storyline. You finally find out in the last shot what Big's name is and it's John. After all that time. That's what it was. I think that's really, really good. But then they ballsed it up by
doing those two films.
Do you mean the second film, I would say?
The first film was just good enough, wasn't it?
It just passed the test. It was a nice amount of, you know, there was enough story there, enough jokes. The second film.
Bad. Really, really
bordering
bad.
Bordering on racist.
Not bordering.
No, racist.
Past the border. Way past it.
I still will never recover from being in the cinema and thinking they're not. No, they're not. They can't do this. And then the whole thing just happened.
Well, in problematic past news, I went to see Sex and the City 2 three times.
More than anyone in the world has ever seen it.
More than Sarah Jessica Parker herself has seen it. Probably more than the director's seen it. I really loved it at first. And then it was only when you get a bit older. Well, not for you because you're clearly cleverer than me. But like, clearly more savvy to these things. I was just sat there, you know, I loved it. But then you realise that it's actually incredibly racist and borderline homophobic and actually just really shit. Just a really bad film in general. But it has got Liza in.
Is it the film on your basic DVD shelf, Rachel?
Yeah, of course I've got the DVD of it. Why would I not have the DVD?
Is that nestled between The Notebook and How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days?
I don't actually have How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
27 Dresses?
No.
Oh, all right.
They're very old, basic. Well, I've got The Notebook.
How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days is pretty old.
I've not seen
what
that.
What about Devil? I bet you got Devil Wears Prada.
100%.
Oh, yeah. Devil Wears Prada's not basic. It's got Oscar winner Meryl Streep in it.
No, that's a good film. For context, there is a running joke. I feel like we should.
Oh, yeah,
address
we should probably clarify this.
My DVD choices are totally basic.
Yeah, Rachel isn't basic, but her choice in films is. To wrap this up, what do we think is an example of a TV finale that wasn't the best? Because for me, it's Lost.
Where, oh, I gave
I mean,
up long before
series
the
two,
ending.
They just lost me completely. So.
Oh,
that's the name of the show.
Oh, you got mine.
Unintended pun. Lost, they basically spent 6 years going, don't worry, everyone. It's not heaven. It's not purgatory. And then on the last episode, turned out to be heaven and purgatory. So that was the end of it. It was like literally they spent 6 years, literally after the first series, someone at a Q&A was like, there's a lot of people speculating it's purgatory. And the guys were just like, no, of course not.
But well, they had no idea what they were writing, did they?
No, they didn't. They were literally making it up as they went along. And it turned out that, yeah, the fans called it from the beginning.
Suppose you don't know if you're going to get renewed from series to series, I guess. So maybe that was why they were just winging it, clearly.
Yeah, maybe they were hoping it would just get cancelled, they wouldn't have to finish it.
Please.
I would love to think that's what it was. All right, well, congratulations, Broadchurch, for not cocking it up like Lost did anyway. Moving on, this week, Lady Gaga and Prince William made the headlines because they've got together to promote awareness of mental health in a new video. So in the video, the two of them are on Skype together and they're chatting about mental health issues, and it's all part of his Heads Together campaign. So Gaga's spoken a lot in the past about her own struggles with PTSD, and a number of other stars have also spoken on topics like eating disorders, addiction, depression, and bipolar disorder. So obviously they've both had a lot of praise for this campaign because it's had a lot of people talking already and it's only been a matter of days. But what do you think the impact is on stars like these talking about their mental health?
So I think it's really, really refreshing to hear royals speaking about this kind of stuff. You know, earlier this week we had Prince Harry talking about his near breakdown, sort of 20 years on from the death of his mother.
Yes, of course, it was the same week, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was front page news. And, you know, a couple of days later, Prince William released this video. And I just think it's such a refreshing change because these royals, we kind of put them in this little box and we look at them from the outside and go, oh, aren't they perfect and aren't they great and aren't they sort of untouchable?
Well, not even that. Some people look at them and go, aren't they stuffy and out of touch?
Exactly.
And don't they not have a clue about things in the real world?
So it just kind of opens them up and reminds everyone that they are human. And yes, they live privileged lives full of, you know, beautiful things and money and success and all of that kind of stuff, but at the end of the day they are people that go through stuff like we all do.
Yeah.
See, I do agree. I do think like it is really good to see them speaking out, and it is good as well to see kind of like the younger members of the royal family, like, you know, taking ownership of issues like this. Like both Kate Middleton and Prince William have done quite a lot of mental health things, and you know, this seems to be an issue they're really like pushing for, which I think is amazing. But I do just personally feel that I find them hard to relate to. I am never going to relate to Kate Middleton or Prince William.
Your lifestyles are so similar.
I know, what can I say? I just, you know, it's absolutely amazing. And I think that they should continue to speak out. But I just feel personally, and I can't be the only person, that I don't relate to their problems.
No, I agree with what you're saying. Like, it's like, you can't put anyone down for talking about mental health. Anybody talking about mental health, it's obviously a good thing.
Yeah.
But In this specific instance, Lady Gaga and Prince William, they're not two people that you see in the post office. And the idea is, not that I go to the post office or anything, I send my butler instead. But you know, the idea is that they're getting normal people, everyday regular people talking about mental health. And they're not ordinary regular people. They're not relatable people, are they?
It's just, even like as a celebrity, there are some celebrities who come across as quite relatable. And for me, Lady Gaga is just not one of them.
No, it's not. But at the same time, she is a real figurehead for a lot of young people.
Yeah,
like,
that's
I know that her popularity has waned in the past few years, but
she's still an influencer, isn't she?
Yeah, and even, you know, even if she's not an influencer to many people, or as many people, she's still got these really loyal fans. They're really young. They're very easily influenced. And so, you know, her voice is still important, even if it's not as important as it was, say, 4 or 5 years ago, when she was the biggest star in the world, which, you know, she isn't anymore. But to these fans, she is the be-all and end-all. And so, again, it's like, you know, you can't knock anybody for coming out and speaking.
Equally, I feel like going back to the royal sort of thing, like, I feel like people kind of our age and, like, the younger generation, we talk much more about mental health and depression, anxiety and stuff. But it's the older generation that actually need a bit more education on it and to be encouraged to open up about it. So I think, you know, when it's front page of the Daily Express or the Daily Mail or whatever, when it's reaching that older audience, I think it's actually going to think, you know, my grandma might have never considered, like, talking about mental health with me. But if she reads that Prince William's spoken about it on the front page of the Daily Mail, that might make her think, oh.
Especially in relation to grief, which is something everybody experiences at one point or another. You know, he's not talking about, oh, you know, something that nobody goes through. You know, we all experience grief at one point or another. And so it is an important topic, isn't it?
Mm.
I think, you know, a lot of stars have spoken out. And so somebody like Stormzy, he spoke out about his depression right before his album came out. And I think that is really, not to say that it's better than the Royals or anything like that, but I feel like he's a much more relatable person, especially because he was so early on in his career. So he wasn't like an unattainable megastar. He was like, and you know, he, his style, his whole grime thing is, you know, it's so self-made. It's so, he does it all himself. And so you do feel a bit more like he's your mate, yeah, even if he is a media personality.
The other one I was just thinking about, actually, I don't know if she's like specifically spoken like about like, and labelled it as mental health, but someone like Adele, she is this huge megastar, but when she talks about things, I just think she just gets it.
She's got a bit of anxiety before, I'm
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, I think so. But you know, we're just like, she...
That wasn't terribly sensitively put, was it? Gone on about anxiety. She's nice. Mentioned having anxiety before in the past.
But with someone like Lady Gaga, the way that she pitches herself is like as this artist and she does all of these things, whereas Adele pitches herself as a real woman who writes songs. And
who's done really well.
Like just a real person.
Yeah, whereas Gaga arrived as a space alien.
Yeah.
And the idea was that couldn't relate to
it. I think I'm actually more impacted when it's the bigger stars that open up about stuff like this, because I always just think like, God, your lives just seem so perfect. And, you know, like when they come out and say stuff, it's like actually it shatters that illusion almost.
Yeah, that nobody's perfect. And, you know, people who are trying to be, you know, trying to achieve what they've got, but think they have certain obstacles, it's like, oh, actually, no, they've got those obstacles too, and that's not going to be an obstacle for me. So, yeah, I guess it is inspiring in that way as well. The other thing that I just want to say before we wrap this up is Prince William and Prince Harry are obviously both men, and that is, you know, within the conversation about mental health, men's mental health is a big problem. Like, you know, suicide in young men is a real problem, and I think any celebrity, man especially, who comes out and talks about mental health, because it is still such a problem for young men, is to be praised.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. All right, brilliant. We're done with that. Just put that away. Yeah, that was great. All right, cracking. The last thing I want to talk about this week is Damian Lewis. So he got himself in a bit of hot water because during a Q&A with The Guardian, he came out. I'm just going to read out what he said, actually. I'm not even going to give any intro. I'm just going to let him speak for himself. He said, there's a point of view that only privately educated actors are becoming dominant in acting, but statistically, that's not true. He goes on to say that he feels like he's still in a minority as somebody who went to Eton in the workplace. So just to reiterate, he went to Eton and he thinks that that makes him a minority in the workplace. I don't really know what to say to that. Does he have a point? Is it time to cut the old Etonians some slack?
I have one thing to say, and it's not even to say, it's just...
Oh...
That was
a sigh of frustration rather than excitement, in case anybody's wondering what's going on in the studio.
I left my tiny violin outside, so unfortunately I won't be able to do a sad song for Damien. I just, like, yeah, he can... I'm not going to say he can get in the bin, that's a bit harsh, but I just think he needs to check himself a little bit. And also it's just like, well, if you name a certain school and you say, oh, as a person who went to Eton, I am in a minority... That means that I can sit in our office and say, like, oh, as a person who went to Bromford's in Wickford, I feel like I'm in my...
Big up Bromford's in Wickford. Yeah.
I feel like we should now all name check.
Represent.
Yeah. But it is. It's just like, well, he can't even accept that as a straight white man who has money, he's not a minority.
He's already had a massive leg up. I mean, he's using the word minority in the mathematical sense, as in he might be the only person in that room who's gone to Eton or whatever boarding school it is that particular actors have gone to.
Just tell me how that's held him back in any sort of role he's landed. How is being an Eton educated...
But it's the use of the word minority as well. It's like you say, he's using... Like, the word minority, it kind of implies, you know, it's somebody who hasn't had the opportunities and because of their, like, status, they've, like, lost out on stuff.
It's got connotations of, like, oppression, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And... I don't think that's what going to Eton particularly does. It's interesting that you said that, though, Ash, about what he's had to endure, because James Blunt last year famously said that going to boarding school and being perceived as, in quotes, posh, has held him back in the music industry, especially early on in his career. A lot of people told him he was too posh to make it. And he wrote this really angry open letter. So what do you think of that argument, that, you know, certain people aren't willing to take you seriously if you've got a privileged background?
I get it. I just don't think it's something you've got the real right to moan about.
It's a little bit like my crystal shoes are too tight, isn't it?
Yeah. Any disadvantage that brings you has been more than compensated for in the privileges you've been given.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, fine, James, people might not take you fully seriously, but check your privilege. Like, that's, you know, the reasons why you are privileged have got you quite far anyway. Like, I'm sure
I'm really
you're
rich,
not
but
a disadvantage.
I can't make the music I want to make because, you know, just do all my fans are just... posh people. And
yeah, it's like you might not make the cover of NME, but you did also have a number one single for about 2.5 months. Do you remember that summer when Your Beautiful was number one?
Just do us all a favour and don't make any more music.
Well, I am a fan of James Blunt. I saw him
out of my misery.
I saw him live in concert with HuffPost UK and Tim and Edit there, Caroline Frost. And we saw Jeremy Clarkson at the concert.
There you go. That's all you need to say, isn't it?
Oh my God. Yeah, you're right.
That's just it, isn't it?
That's the audience I'm in. Jeremy Clarkson, Jeremy, James May.
Like, oh God.
You're right at home there, Daniel. They're two of your faves, aren't they?
Yeah, I was actually lined up to host Top Gear, but then they found out I couldn't drive.
You know what?
So I was unfortunately binned off.
I would rather be at home watching Sex and the City 2 than at a James Blunt concert with Jeremy Clarkson.
What a perfect note to end on. So as always, we're going to wrap things up with a quiz this week. And as always, I've kept the theme of the quiz secret. So, as you might know, today marks a very special occasion. It's Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II's 91st birthday.
Which one? The official one or the not official one?
It's her 91st birthday. And so, inspired by Her Majesty's big day, this week's quiz is centering around queens on screen. So what I'm going to do is...
I thought it's going to be about birthdays. It's going to be about the queen.
Nope. So I've got my box here. Woo! With different actresses' names in and the year, which they played a certain regal role, either fictional or historical.
Okay, I see where you're going now.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
actual queens.
Queens.
I just thought you meant like iconic people.
No, like genuine queens. Like genuine.
We overuse the word queens so much.
Yeah, that's it. No, it's not like, hey, queen. It's like queens.
Oh.
I suppose that wasn't much differentiation
is
with
Rita
my stupid
Ora
voice
in
there.
This quiz?
Rita Ora has not made the quiz. So
going.
You are so stupid.
What about Denise Welsh?
All right.
Sorry.
Mylene Klass has also not made the quiz. So I'm going to give you each a name and you're going to read it out and tell me who was the fictional or historical queen that this person played in that year. So, Ash, you missed the quiz last week, so we're going to come to you first. So,
I've got Idina Menzel in 2014. And I want to say Frozen, but I feel like Frozen's older than 2014. But I'm not going to... I'm going to go with my gut. I'm going to say Frozen.
It was
Queen Elsa.
It is indeed Queen Elsa from Frozen in 2013.
Well, you put 14 on this. I should get a point by default.
No.
No. Anyway, right. Look, you got it right. Queen Elsa, Adele Dazeem. Rachel, who've you got?
I don't think I'm going to be very good at this. Got Dame Judi Dench, 1998.
I know.
That's not your question.
Who's the queen that she played in 1998?
I don't know this.
I'll give you the clue.
Okay.
She won the Oscar for it.
I still don't know. It's not basic enough.
Shakespeare in Love is pretty basic, to be honest. Ash, do you want to...
Is it Queen Elizabeth I?
It's Queen Elizabeth I in Shakespeare in Love.
I've got the DVD, but I've never watched it.
Oh, see, you want to break the plastic off, Rachel. Go home and watch Shakespeare in Love, because let me tell you, it's basic but fabulous. It'll fit right in with the rest of your DVDs. All right, Ash, you're two ahead, girl, so get stuck in.
I thought it was just one ahead.
Oh, my God!
Do you want the point or not?
Yeah, I'm giving you an extra point, girl.
Glenn Close, 1990. It's not Cruella de Vil. Arguably, she is a queen.
Flawless queen, Cruella de Vil.
Do you know what? I have
I'll
no idea.
I'll give you a clue.
Okay.
Because this one is probably the hardest of all of them. It's a queen from Shakespeare.
Ooh.
Is that helping?
All right, Rachel, I've read Shakespeare. I'm not separating you two again.
What's the one with the Wall of Fairies?
Queen of the Fairies?
No.
Is that your final answer?
That was my high school nickname, Ashley. I'm not in the quiz.
No,
Midsummer
the Shakespeare
Night's
play.
Dream.
That's it. I want to say the queen from Midsummer Night's Dream, but I can't remember. Tatiana?
It's not Tatiana. Rachel, do you know who it is?
I don't even know it.
Do you not? It's Queen Gertrude from Hamlet.
Ah.
Have you not seen that film? It's Mel Gibson as Hamlet and her as Gertrude. And let me tell you, there is sexual tension.
See, I always
them.
Watch the Kenneth Branagh version.
See, that one is good, but it is about 10 hours long.
Oh, God, yeah. We watched that at school. It was really long.
I also watched it at school. I think it was just to actually stop us from having to do any teaching.
I've got the DVD.
I've got the DVD, but I never had it out the plastic. I just got it so that people would think I was clever. And do you know what? I failed. Rachel, who's next? You're on nothing, so let's do this.
Helena Bonham Carter, 2016.
2016.
Didn't she play our current queen? Is that right?
No. Actually, no, it's not right. And not in 2016.
Oh no, wait, Helena Bonham Carter. I was thinking of completely the wrong person.
Are you thinking of a different...
I was thinking of Helen Mirren.
Okay, well, I'm afraid that is incorrect. Helena Bonham Carter in 2016 played the Red Queen from Alice in Wonderland in Through the Looking Glass. And you can look forward to Helena Bonham Carter again later in the quiz. Ash, you're up.
She's not even called Helen.
You're thinking of Helen. She's called Helen.
Right, I've got Helena Bonham Carter, 2010.
Which queen did she play in 2010?
Oh.
This quiz is so hard.
I got no idea, so I'm going to say Catherine of Aragon.
Oh, good queen, but no. Yes, queen, but no queen in this instance. She played the Queen Mother in The King's Speech opposite Colin Firth. Rachel, you're up. You're still on 0 points, so you can still win this back.
Totes. It is Elizabeth Taylor, 1963. One of the greatest films, Cleopatra.
Have you seen Cleopatra?
I've also seen Cleopatra.
It's not even basic.
I know. Elizabeth Taylor.
Isn't it like 10 hours long?
And actually, no, it's not that long.
Helena Bonham Carter then played Elizabeth Taylor. It's the circle of life. Stop right, that Simba. There for copyright reasons. All right, Rachel, you're back in the game. Yes. Ash, who have we got?
I've got Tina Turner in 1975.
Tina, turn it up. Stop that there for copyright reasons. 1975, Tina Turner, queen.
I've not got the foggiest.
It's a fictional queen.
Doesn't help.
She played the acid queen in the Who rock opera, Tommy.
Wow. Niche.
I didn't even throw that over to you, Rachel, because I just didn't think you were going to
get it. No, it's fine.
Who's next?
Is it my turn?
Yeah. So this is to basically stay in the game.
Okay.
Rachel, who we got?
I've got Dame Helen Mirren.
Who did she play?
She plays the current queen.
Queen Elizabeth the what?
Second.
Second, yeah. Well done. Yes. In what film?
Isn't it called The Queen?
The imaginatively titled The Queen.
She also played her on stage as well, I think.
She has. She won the Oscar and the Tony for playing the Queen. Two each. Okay, so first one to shout it out. Oh, it's a good one.
You wrote these.
I know, but you know what? I'm just so excited about my own quiz. Right. Okay, so the year is 2008. Which queen did Natalie Portman play?
Oh, wait.
All right, well, that's all I've got time for.
Oh, God, I know this, and I know the minute you say it, I'm going to kick myself.
I don't know. I don't think I know this. While Ash is thinking, can I just say that Jackie is a brilliant film? Everyone should go and see that.
Can I just counter that and say Jackie's not a brilliant film, although Natalie Portman's mouth is a dream all the way through.
Ash, do we need a commercial break?
Was it the Swan Lake one?
No. Although she did technically play the Swan Queen in that, but that's not the queen in question. Not in 2008.
Then I don't know.
All right, I'll give you a clue because I don't have any other tiebreakers. You mentioned Catherine of Aragon earlier. And it's not Catherine of Aragon.
Anne Boleyn.
It's Anne Boleyn. She played Anne Boleyn and the other Boleyn girl. So I'm going to basically...
You set me up and I answered it correctly.
Nicely done.
Thanks, Ash.
So I'm going to take these two away for some research on famous queens, since apparently neither of them know any. So that's all I've got time for this week. So we'll be back next week. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. Laters!